Hi, Eric.
Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Doing well. I'm Sarah Posner. This is The Posner Show. And my guest today is Eric Siegel. He's a professor at Georgia State University Law School and the author of the book Supreme Myths, Why the Supreme Court is Not a Court and Its Justices Are Not Judges. Showing it to the camera now. You can't see it, Eric, okay. But I did.
Thanks for the job.
And we're going to talk today about the case that the Supreme Court took this week involving legislative prayer and the town of Greece, that's spelled like the country, Greece, New York, and the implications for establishment law jurisprudence for this case. So let's just start by explaining what the case is about, and then we'll get into why it's important that the Supreme Court, or meaningful,
sure.
that the Supreme Court granted cert in this case.
Sure. So in this town of Greece, New York, starting prior to 1999, the city council would begin its sessions with a moment of silence. And by the way, skipping to the end of the story, that's what I hope the Supreme Court rules they have to do. But that was what they did until 1999. Then starting in 1999, they started inviting chaplains to give a prayer to open up each session. And this is going on in cities and towns and states, and in fact the U.S. Congress, but right. in cities, towns, and states all over the country. And from 1999 to 2007, without exception, every single prayer was done by a Christian. And in a large number of those prayers, Jesus was referenced, the Holy Trinity was referenced. They were obviously Christian prayers. There's no doubt about that. And then two people filed suit challenging this as a violation of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment.
Not just two people, two residents of the town of Greece.
Yes. Now, they're the named plaintiffs, but the truth is Americans United for Separation of Church and State is, I believe, funding the lawsuit. But that's how most of these lawsuits go.
Right.
And the town is being represented by a public interest organization on the other side.
Alliance Defending Freedom, I think, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. So, after they filed the lawsuit, the town actually invited a couple rabbis, I believe one Muslim, to give the prayers. But once the lawsuit started going, they stopped doing that. So basically...
So once the lawsuit started going, they stopped bringing
in... Yes, well, because the record was closed. At some point, the judge said, I've heard all the evidence I'm going to hear. Right. No, the record is closed. No one, because the Supreme Court does irrational things all the time, but no one can really look at the record of this case without coming away with the idea that virtually every time there was a prayer to open these city council sessions, it was a Christian prayer. And there are a couple other facts that are very important. One is some people have to be at these meetings. For example, if you're a police officer, a new police officer, before you can actually go on the job, you have to be sworn in at this meeting. If you have a zoning dispute with the town, you have to go to this meeting. So it's not like a high school graduation where you don't have to go. Some people have to, you know, that's part of their civic life, have to go to the city council.
Is that relevant, though? Does that make it more objectionable that some people have to go? I mean, it's a meeting of the city council, which presumably any resident of the town should feel perfectly comfortable going through.
Right? The Second Circuit thought it was a relevant fact. I tend to agree with you that it's not altogether that important, but it is in this sense. This is not a city park where theoretically one could avoid going if one didn't want to. This is a governmental meeting that some citizens, whether they want to or not, simply have to attend.
Okay, so Leslie Knope in me is going to object to the park analogy, because everyone should feel welcome at the park.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Anyway, so the question is, does opening these city council sessions amount to an establishment of religion in violation of the First Amendment?
Right.
The Supreme Court has only ever resolved this kind of issue once.
Let me stop you there and ask you this. So this is so prevalent, this question of sectarian prayer to open legislative meetings. And is it because the Supreme Court is the fact that the Supreme Court hasn't addressed this issue in, 30 years?
It's part of it, I think.
Is it because people haven't challenged it?
No,
or
the Supreme
Court hasn't taken it up?
There are lawsuits all over the country. Right now, in the 11th Circuit, where I live in Atlanta, Georgia, the 11th Circuit upheld sectarian prayer at these kinds of meetings. The 4th Circuit has said the opposite, although for some very strange reasons. And then there are a couple other circuits. There was a great case in Indiana. Can I mention this for a minute? There was a great case in Indiana where a state legislator sung a hymn to Jesus and then led the entire legislature in singing this hymn to Jesus. And eventually, obviously, a lawsuit was filed. It took about 6 or 7 years, but eventually the Court of Appeals dismissed the case for lack of standing. We don't want to go there. But there have been a lot of standing issues, meaning was there an appropriate plaintiff before the court?
Do you think that's why the Second Circuit said that it's important, that it's a relevant fact that some people have to go to these meetings as part of their job?
Maybe. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, the court said that in the context of the merits, but certainly I think the court had an eye towards a possible standing problem. But let me just say, I want to put my bias right out front.
Sure.
As both a policy matter am a constitutional matter, I think these prayers should stop. So I want to play the other side just for a minute. Mm-hmm. Someone who doesn't believe that might answer to you that the reason these prayers are going on is because they've been going on for hundreds of years, and they'd be right. Legislatures in this country, city, town, state, and Congress, have been starting their sessions with sectarian prayer for a long time. In fact, one of the briefs filed in the case to convince the Supreme Court to grant certiorari was filed by 59 members of Congress. And it is the case today that Congress opens up its House opens up its legislative sessions with sectarian prayers, almost all of which are Christian.
Yeah.
How insane is that? I mean, that's still the case today.
But wasn't there a big flap a few years ago? They had a Hindu open the prayers, and there were some people who were
upset about that. Every now and then they bring in a non-Christian, but right. The vast majority are not only members of the Christian faith who give the prayer, but mm-hmm. the prayers themselves refer to Christian ideas.
Now, so this is one segment of Establishment Clause jurisprudence. There are other pieces of it, nativity scenes, school prayer. There are many different contexts, and so there's a different line of cases involving each particular setting and there are Establishment Clause cases that don't involve prayer at all. But this is sort of a different line of cases than, say, school prayer.
Well, I would like, it's not, in the Supreme Court, it's not a different line of cases, it's different mm-hmm. line of case, and that's the problem. There's one case and one case only. And it's
so there's this case, Marsh versus Chambers,
yes.
Which is the one from 30 years ago.
Yes.
And you've written that the ruling in that case has produced chaos.
Yes, I have written that. I wrote that article 2 years ago and strongly suggested the Supreme Court try to resolve the chaos. Mm-hmm. So 2 years later, I guess they have. The facts of that case are important. Nebraska had a paid chaplain who was a Christian, and he had been on the job for 16 years. But halfway through that time period, when a Jewish person complained about the references to Jesus in his prayers, he stopped. And he only gave non-sectarian prayers. In other words, mm-hmm. there were references to God, but there were no references to Jesus, no references to the Holy Trinity, no references to anything Christian-specific. And that was a pretty big fact when the Supreme Court upheld the Nebraska practice of having this paid legislative chaplain. But the most interesting thing about that case is it is the only Establishment Clause case I know, it might be the only one of the very few Supreme Court cases I know, where there was no theory, there was no principle, there was no precedent. All the court said was, there was legislative prayer in 1787, and therefore it can't be unconstitutional. It was a purely historical analysis. In dissent, Justice Brennan said that if you asked 100 eighth graders, would this practice be constitutional under all the other tests the court has used, all of them would say it's unconstitutional. And this historical test is very pernicious. It's really a bad test, and I'll tell you why. In 1868, the people who ratified the 14th Amendment believed schools should and could be racially segregated. Mm-hmm. In 1868, the people who ratified the 14th Amendment, believed that women couldn't be bartenders or lawyers, obviously couldn't vote. We don't do constitutional law this way. The fact that something was constitutional in 1787, there's a lot of torture-like activity going on in 1787 that wouldn't be allowed today. In fact, Justice Scalia has mentioned that. One of the great reliers on history, at least in mm-hmm. theory, has said that he would not allow some of the practices, some of the beating practices that went on back then. So Marsh versus Chambers is odd in that it's a purely historical case. And what mm-hmm. that did, and the reason there's chaos, is it gave zero guidance to the lower courts on how to handle this type of situation. Because the chaplain there didn't refer to Jesus, didn't refer to Christ, didn't refer to Christian ideas and values per se. So now what happens is over the last 15 years, we have all these state legislatures and city and town councils starting their sessions with prayers that refer to Jesus.
Right. And the court in Marsh versus Chambers did not address how the case might have come out differently if the chaplain in Nebraska hadn't stopped referencing Jesus or the Trinity or explicitly Christian theology.
Exactly correct. Now, Justice Rehnquist, who is one of the justices who believed that the Establishment Clause was almost never violated by mm-hmm. virtually anything, once wrote that the one cornerstone principle of the Establishment Clause is that the government may not prefer one religion over another.
Mm-hmm.
That seems pretty obvious, doesn't it? I mean, it's pretty obvious to me. Yeah. And even Justice Rehnquist said that.
Right. So, but that Marsh versus Chambers was decided at a time when the court was a little bit more protective of church-state separation than it is now. I mean, maybe not as protective as it was maybe a couple of decades before that? Or am I...
No, you're right. That's kind of the irony of this. Mm-hmm. In 1984, the Supreme Court was a much more separationist court than it is today. For example, the type of aid that the government could give to parochial schools was much more limited back then than it is today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really worried about this case. I think it's possible five justices, obviously the five conservatives, are going to say that we have had sectarian legislative prayer since 1787. that no one is going to prison, no one is being taxed, no one is being coerced to say the prayer. They just have to sit by respectfully while it occurs, and there's nothing wrong with it. And I think that would be a terrible decision.
Because?
I think there is inherent unfairness when the government starts its official business by referring to one specific religion. The test that the Second Circuit used in this case was extremely similar to the test Justice O'Connor once came up with, which is called the endorsement test. Mm-hmm. And although I hate being in agreement with Justice O'Connor, something I almost never am, but in this situation, I think she was onto something. And it was similar to what Justice Rehnquist said. What Justice O'Connor said was, the government is not allowed to make distinctions among religion so that people who are not members of that faith feel like political outsiders. So right. If you're a Jewish person or a Muslim person and you go to the city council to fight a zoning battle you're having with members of the council, and let's say you're wearing a yarmulke or mm-hmm. you identify yourself clearly as a Muslim, and now you have to have a confrontation with this council that just started its meeting saying that we owe everything to Jesus, it's going to make you feel a little bit mistreated, don't you think?
Well, it's comparable to when judges post the Ten Commandments in their courtroom.
Yes. Yes.
Right. I mean, not exactly the same, but sort of the same kind of thing.
Well, the thing is, so Justice Breyer, by the way, who we don't really know how he's going to vote in this case, but there is a very simple solution to this problem. And one of the arguments made by people on the other side is, if you forbid legislative prayer, what about In God We Trust on the coins? What about Under God and the Pledge of Allegiance? It's not truly American to take out all references to God. I think there are two slam dunk answers to that critique. One is, In God We Trust is very different than In a Christian God We Trust. Mm-hmm. I think those are two very different things. But In God We Trust on the coins and Under God and the Pledge of Allegiance, there's no easy solution as to what to do about that. There is a very easy, simple, convenient solution what to do about legislative prayer. This is what I wrote in my article, which mm-hmm. is just do what schools do, have a moment of silence. And then anybody...
But in your view, would it be constitutional to say the meetings are once a week? Mm-hmm. 1 week have a rabbi, the next week have an imam, the next week have someone from a non-Abrahamic faith, then a Christian chaplain, you know, it kind of rotated around. I mean, in your view, would that be constitutional?
I think that raises extremely serious problems. How mm-hmm. much rotation is enough is the first
right.
problem. The second problem is, what is the content of the prayers and how proselytizing can they be? We don't want the government involved in that. That's mm-hmm. what the Fourth Circuit held, basically. Mm-hmm. So we don't want the government involved in that at all. So the only way around that is to pretty much forbid it altogether.
Right.
And the third problem is, and I can see...
That's what the Fourth Circuit ruled?
I'm sorry. Yeah, believe it or not, the Fourth Circuit. The third problem with that solution, excuse me, is, and this is tough, is it doesn't help atheists. In other words...
I was just about to bring that up.
Right. Now, God and Trust is also unfair to atheists.
Right.
As is
and
God
I think
and
and the God and the Pledge of Allegiance has right. been challenged by the atheist,
if one's going to be principled, I think we should probably take those references. But you see, changing that really requires a lot of work. The Supreme Court issuing a decision saying, like it did with elementary, with public schools, no more prayer in school, but feel free to have a moment of silence, solves all the problems. A person stands up and says, we're going to have a moment of silence, and use it for whatever purpose you want. You may use it for a religious purpose. You may use it for a spiritual purpose. You may use it for no purpose. But let's solemnize this occasion by having a moment of silence. Why doesn't that take care of everybody? Seems to me that's the easiest solution.
So the plaintiffs prevailed in the Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. What was the argument that the town made and will make at the Supreme Court?
The town, and it's going to be a lot of amicus briefs on this case.
Yeah.
This is going to be a front page New York Times headline case. This is going to be big. And I think there's going to be two lines of arguments. Most people will simply say there is no precedent for invalidating this because it's been going on forever. And although Marsh versus Chambers wasn't directly on point, the Supreme Court did give its blessing, so to speak, to legislative prayers in 1984, and we shouldn't overturn something that's been going on since 1787. That's going to be one argument. Mm-hmm. A second argument, which is going to be directed at Alito, Scalia, and Thomas, and all three of them are going to accept this argument, is that the Establishment Clause should only prohibit coercive governmental acts. In fact, Justice Kennedy once took that position. He then went on to define coercion in very strange ways in subsequent cases, siding with separationists. But I think what Scalia would say is no one is being forced to pay taxes, no one is being forced to pray, no one is going to jail because of their religion, there is simply no violation here. Now, the response to that argument is very simple. We not only have an Establishment Clause, we have a Free Exercise Clause in the First Amendment. And mm-hmm. if you are punished for your religion, if you are taxed more because of your religion, if something bad happens to you because of your religion, the Free Exercise Clause protects you. The coercion view of the Establishment Clause reads the Establishment Clause out of the Constitution. We don't need it. What the First Amendment was all about in terms of religion was the government is not allowed to punish religion, and it's not allowed to benefit religion. The punishing part comes with free exercise. The benefiting part comes with establishment. And the government shouldn't be allowed to benefit religion. And in my opinion, when a Christian chaplain stands up, and by the way, they call him or her the chaplain of the month, believe it or not. When the chaplain of the month gives this prayer and it refers to Jesus, it is lending the hand of government to the idea that we're a Christian government. And that's what the Establishment Clause is supposed to prevent.
Well, don't some of the anti-separationists argue that really what the Establishment Clause prohibits is a denominational endorsement? So it's okay for the government to endorse Christianity writ large, but it wouldn't be okay for it to endorse Catholicism or Methodism or Episcopalianism.
I don't know. I think people who argue that have a very bizarre view of the Establishment Clause, because to a Jewish person, to a Muslim, to an atheist, the endorsement of Christianity is no different than the endorsement of Catholicism, the endorsement of...
Right, they would argue that we're a Christian nation, so they just need to accept that.
Right, except what is the point of the Establishment Clause? And B,
I don't see any point to the Establishment Clause.
Right, but they would read out of the Constitution.
Except that nobody could make them all be Catholics or Baptists.
No, the Free Exercise Clause does that. We don't need that's the point. We don't need the Establishment Clause for that, because the Free Exercise Clause is already there for that. What Scalia and Alito and Thomas and Rehnquist didn't understand was, if you read the Establishment Clause the way they do, there is no longer an Establishment Clause. And that violates a cardinal rule of constitutional interpretation, which is we don't read provisions of the Constitution, most provisions of the Constitution, to mean nothing.
So this is what results from the... So is this coercion argument, that is settled law?
This is really hard to explain, so I apologize. The religious symbol on governmental property cases that you referred to earlier, menorahs and creches and public buildings, those decisions, and Ten Commandments, those decisions are completely incoherent. One scholar said that the law of that area is more like interior decorating than constitutional law. But the general idea is, if you have enough different religious symbols, then it's okay. How much is enough? We don't know. We'll decide case by case.
Right.
Justice Kennedy, who articulated the coercion test, then went on to say prayers at graduation ceremonies in high schools were unconstitutional, even though nobody is forced to go to their high school graduation, prompting Justice Scalia to berate him for suggesting a form of the definition of the word coercion he's never heard of before. So, assuming Justice Kennedy is the swing vote, and he is most likely to be, Justice Breyer has been a little strange in this area, but I think Justice Kennedy is going to be the swing vote, and as with most areas like abortion, affirmative action, terrorism, other key constitutional law issues, what Justice Kennedy is going to do next, not only do we not know, but I'm very convinced he doesn't know.
But I thought that when, I can't remember whether it was Justice Sotomayor or Justice Kagan was nominated, there was a lot of talk about how we knew so little about her views on Establishment Clause questions. But now I can't remember which one of them it was.
Right. I think Sotomayor might be a bigger question mark than Justice Kagan. But I would be, within 5 years of the court deciding the Affordable Care Act case the way it did, any con law scholar who says they'd be shocked by anything has to be very careful. I'll be shocked if Kagan or Sotomayor would vote to uphold a practice where 90 or so percent of the prayers given at a city council meeting over a decade not only were given by Christian speakers, but referred to Jesus, the Holy Trinity, or Christian-specific symbols. I'd be shocked, just shocked.
So if they do apply this coercion standard, they would say nobody has to go to the city council meeting.
I think that's why the judge who wrote the Second Circuit opinion is Judge Calabresi. He was a law professor. And not because he was a law professor, but I just mentioned that for historical purposes. He's brilliant. He's a very smart man. And I think he put into the decision this idea that some people have to attend these meetings for that very purpose. If you want to build a new...
Back to what we were talking about before. Right.
If you want to build a new front porch, and there's an historical society in your neighborhood, and you have to get a variance from the zoning commission, you have to go to this council. And I think that the best visual of this is imagine a Jewish person or a Muslim person who is self-identifying themselves that way, who goes to one of those meetings knowing they're going to be adversarial to the city council. And the city council begins the meeting by saying, we owe everything to Jesus Christ. I mean, I think that's that's a bad image for America, in my opinion.
Right, right.
That's not how our government should work.
But you don't sound optimistic.
No, I'm very pessimistic because I don't know if the court would have taken the case to affirm it.
Okay.
But there is a circuit split, so I don't know. And I would say I'm 60-40 pessimistic. Again, with Justice Kennedy, Jeffrey Rosen, who is, I think, one of the best Supreme Court writers there is for the New Republic and other journals. There are two Jeffreys, Toobin and Rosen. Don't talk to me about Toobin. But about Rosen, who I think is really, really good, he called Justice Kennedy the great agonizer. And I believe it's true. I believe, and that's a good thing. I think it's a very nice thing that Justice Kennedy, A, changes his mind, B, often reflects very deeply and very personally on these very difficult issues and doesn't provide knee-jerk responses like Scalia mm-hmm. and Thomas do mm-hmm. and Marshall and Douglas used to do, just to be fair. So what, how Kennedy will perceive this case is anybody's guess.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you about a related case. It's not at the Supreme Court. I think, I can't remember whether it was a district court decision or whether it had gone up to the Fifth Circuit, but it's the Texas cheerleader case. And how that fits into this.
I'm not familiar with that, but are you familiar with the law Texas passed yesterday? The Merry Christmas law?
Yes, because people are so deprived of being able to say Merry Christmas.
Right, Texas actually passed a law saying that Christmas trees and menorahs are allowed in public schools.
That will certainly be challenged, right?
Say again?
That will certainly be challenged in court?
I don't know, because this is an issue that would be one of first impression. Mm. You can't pray in school. I mean, you can pray in school. You can't have teacher-led prayer in school.
Right.
There are Christmas trees in virtually every public school in this country, as far as I can tell. So I don't know if the court would find the mere presence of a Christmas tree. What I find interesting about this is that Texas law, if it's unconstitutional, passing the law doesn't help. In fact, if anything, it hurts. I mean, if I was a member of the Texas legislature and I wanted to have Christmas trees and menorahs in my schools, I wouldn't pass a law announcing to the whole world that's
Texas. But the Texas cheerleader case involved cheerleaders, I can't remember the town that it was in, but cheerleaders who had banners with Bible verses on it and other Christian...
Right. Well, I remember now. Well, the Supreme Court has said that prayers at high school football games are unconstitutional. Let me rephrase that.
Are constitutional.
School-led prayers at football mm-hmm. games are unconstitutional.
Unconstitutional. Okay. And so the cheerleaders are not officials of the school. They're fellow students.
Right. And where, mm-hmm. what has been litigated is valedictorians. And what they are allowed or not allowed to do. And this gets really murky because in the case of cheerleaders, for example, obviously cheerleaders can get together in a circle and pray to themselves if they want to.
This was banners that they had up at the football game.
Well, if it's their idea, then I think it's probably okay. Mm-hmm. But it gets very murky when or if a school official is involved.
They have a cheerleading coach who said, it's okay, you can do that.
Well, it's okay, you can do that. It's different than you should do that.
Oh, okay.
But we're in a territory there that is incredibly gray. The court has never resolved. And frankly, I find very difficult. We don't want to...
Silence.
No, people like me who are very separationist. I am a separationist as they come.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be perceived as saying people can't pray inside school walls when they want to if it doesn't disrupt the school function.
Well, you know, I read a very interesting op-ed in a Baptist web magazine, mm-hmm. which was basically saying, well, regardless of whether this is constitutional or not, is it really Christ-like to be, you know, putting this stuff in people's face at a football game?
Now, on that question...
And I thought that was a really interesting take on it.
Me too, and I had a really, 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 really honest reaction. I have no earthly idea.
Well, I wasn't asking you to comment on that. I just thought it was really interesting that somebody who shared their faith tradition was skeptical of it, not necessarily on constitutional grounds, but just on the grounds of, is this a good representation of our faith to be pushing it in people's faces at a football game?
Well, there's a Supreme Court case that really kind of gave birth, I think, to that idea. In a case involving a menorah and a creche, the Supreme Court said the creche was unconstitutional because it wasn't surrounded by any other religious symbols. But the Hanukkah was constitutional because it was surrounded by other religious symbols. And a plurality of the court said the Hanukkah was not a religious symbol. And I have Jewish friends who went berserk over that. What do you mean the menorah is not a Jewish symbol, a religious symbol? Of course it is. And there are a lot of fundamentalists. Americans United for Separation of Church and State is funded to a significant degree by people who are religious, who think mm-hmm. that they don't want to merge government and religion. We want to keep them separate. Both will do better when they are separate.
Right.
And I really
do
agree with that. I think that's the way to go. So the cheerleaders, if my daughter, I have 22, a 5, and a 4, if when my 5-year-olds, God forbid, they became cheerleaders, and if they were religious, neither of which is likely to happen, I would say to them, shouldn't this be a private, very sentimental, very meaningful act? A banner at a football game doesn't strike me that way.
That's what I would say.
So I guess I did express an opinion on that, even though I said I wasn't going to.
Okay, so the Town of Greece case is going to be heard when?
It'll be argued probably in the fall of next year, and my guess is won't be decided until the last day of the term next year.
Okay, so we're looking at more than a year from now, a decision in this case.
You never know, but in all likelihood. I do think it's going to be a very divisive. Actually, in virtually every important church-state case of the last 30 years, there has not been a 5-4 or 7-2 decision. There's been a 4-3-2 or 4-4-1 with Justice O'Connor.
Yeah.
So it might actually, if I really had to bet, I would bet that we'll come out of this case without any clear guidance for the lower courts.
Right. Or for city councils and legislatures.
I do think it's interesting that if the plaintiff's lawyer stands up in this case and says, Congress begins its prayers, its sessions, with sectarian prayers. Congress does that. And you should stop that. Boy, that's going to be interesting, isn't it? I mean, to be frank, I've not written about religious issues in a couple of years now. I knew Congress had prayers. Did you know they were Christian sectarian prayers? I didn't know that. I mean, Congress starts off its sessions with references to Jesus Christ all the time.
Well, I just saw a couple weeks ago the Senate chaplain speaking at the National Day of Prayer prayer event that takes place inside one of the House office buildings, and he was talking quite openly about that.
Right.
About praying in Jesus' name and feeling quite free to.
Right.
So,
I wish I could sometimes shake people of devout faiths and say, you don't want government in your business. And the more you put yourself in governmental business, the more they're going to put themselves in your business, and we're all better off if we just keep it separate.
Well, I'll have you back when the case is decided by the Supreme Court, and we'll see how well you predicted the chaotic outcome.
Thank you, Sarah. It's been a pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Okay, thanks, Sarah.
Okay, bye-bye.